Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Live. I think we're live. Hey, everyone. Let's see if we can see ourselves on the monitor so we can tell what other people are looking
at. All right, let's do that.
Hey.
Okay.
I see us. There we are. Now, it's going to be kind of creepy for us because we see a delayed image on the screen.
but we'll make it.
We'll be okay. We'll try.
We'll try. Okay.
Hey, everyone. My name is Mark Stevenson. I am with Coldesi.
And Mark Vila here, Coleman & Company.
Yeah. And we're here in our brand new digs. This is our first presentation from our new webinar room. If you have been part of the CAS family for a while, you know that we do webinars all the time. Mark does usually at least three a week, and I do one or two a week. So we've got our own space now to do it in, and you're seeing that now.
And we're here to do another one, and this is our first one that is using YouTube's live streaming player. So we're here. If you're logged into YouTube or you happen to get a notification because you subscribe to our channel or anything else, then you're going to find us here, and hopefully you found us through some of our other platforms like our Facebook group,
yep,
the Custom Apparel Startups, or through some emails that we share. So this is a new experience for us in our new room, a new platform, and hopefully we're not going to talk to nobody forever.
Well, first of all, I want to let everybody know we're terrified right now. That's why we put this in front of us, so we'd have some kind of security blanket while we talk.
All right. It says that we've got people here hanging out with us, though.
Okay. Well, that's awesome and odd. What do you think we should do? Should we answer the questions that are live? By the way, this is our marketing Q&A, and Mark and I are doing this because we also do the CAS podcast, and in it we try to share our experience in sales and marketing. We've both got a lot, and that's what we spend all day doing, is trying to figure out how to sell stuff and how to market stuff properly, where we know that you guys spend most of your time actually doing real work, making shirts, embroidering designs, printing stuff, and of course, you know, trying to find new business.
So then I say we get right into it, and if somebody asks a question live, so if you're looking at the live YouTube page right now, you might be looking at us through one of our pages, and if you are, there is actually a link a little bit below that you can view it directly on YouTube, and you'll see a link down there. It says view, watch it on YouTube, and if you're there in the top right corner, you should see like Vince. Is telling us to calm down, take it easy.
Vince has been too many of our webinars.
But if you have questions or comments like Vince, jump up there in the top right corner, kind of up here. You should see the video. Or actually, it's over there, I believe.
Over there?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
But ask questions. We're going to ask answer the live questions as they come in, and we've also got a pretty nice list that's been generated as the folks were signing up. So let's start with the first one. I'm going to ask it to you.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
The first one is from Mark.
Okay.
How important is my logo?
It's not okay. Really. Okay, so he asked me that question specifically because it's a pet peeve of mine. Because many of you out there, I'm sure, and I know I have done at least on one or two businesses in the past, spent a lot of money and time on my logo and nothing on advertising or marketing after that. So you think if you've got a piece of equipment and a great logo that you're ready to go into business. And I would say having no logo is fine. Having a great logo is good. But having a bad logo can scare away business.
Yeah.
So of those three choices, so no logo, you're okay. A good logo, you're okay. But neither one of those are going to help you make more money. Well, but a bad logo will hurt you.
Yeah. It'll hurt you in a couple different ways. Okay. So for one, if it's terribly hard to digitize, you're not really going to be able to embroider much with your actual logo.
Right.
Okay. So that's one thing. If it's hard to print, It could cost you more money to print or more time to print if you needed t-shirts and things like that. So just the actual creation of your marketing collateral can be a little bit of a pain. But if you look at the most successful businesses out there, many of them are just a font.
That's right.
And that's it.
That's right.
They're just a font.
Not crazy graphics or anything like that.
Yeah, so keep it simple.
Okay, I will say that. And if you don't have a logo at all, it's not going to hurt my feelings.
Well, there's a couple live questions.
Yeah, go ahead. So the first one is from Randy. How important is it that from your website, a customer can calculate his final price for an embroidered apparel on their first visit? Most sites you can't accept biggies. So I guess that's kind of how important it is, that online designing kind of software and kind of website. Mark, what do you think?
Well, if I would say, I have mixed feelings about it, because since I work with Coleman & Company, we're an e-commerce site, and I believe that everything that we have on our site should have a price, and we should be and you should be able to see how much it's going to ship, and how much, if you get a quantity discount, you should be able to find all this information fairly easily.
Mm-hmm.
However, when we're talking about a custom apparel business, it gets tricky at that point in time.
Okay.
If, for example, the first thing that pops in my head is if you're an embroiderer. If you're an embroiderer, like, there's a question now, you know, what's the usual amount charged
per thousand stitches
and things, but it's not always that.
Right.
It's not always the amount of stitches. It's, well, how many trims are in this design? How long is the design going to take to sew out?
That's the big one.
How many colors is it? So it can get complicated. So I would say for the initial success of your business, the importance on getting the final price, the exact final price, is low.
And I'm going to take a little bit different tack.
Sure.
So if your business is local, which 99.5% of our customers, I made that number up, 99.5% of our customers, their business is local. It's people that you know, that you run into, that you market directly, then I don't think that that's important at all. You know, I think if you have a general price range for your products and you're dealing with people one-on-one on the phone or in person or by email, then really it's not that important to be able to calculate exact prices, you know, on the website. I'd much rather have a personal conversation. However, if you think your business is going to be one that thousands of people all over the country, like, let's say, a cafe press, if that's what you aspire to, then, of course, you've got to be able to do that. If you expect to have hundreds of different customers every month, they've got to be able to do that all themselves, because you're not going to hire the phone bank to handle that for you.
And you also need to be 100% confident in your pricing structure and how you put things together. Because if you're new in this business, you're not going to realize all of the woes that you're going to have with pricing out your product over time. Meaning just different materials, different shirts, different garments, different designs can play into it. So it's definitely something that I wouldn't worry about right away.
Right. Now, there are some applications, like we've done a lot of webinars and podcasts with Deco Network. So if you are going to do something like that, they do make it as easy as possible. One thing I definitely would not do is try to figure out that programming yourself, is to pick an off-the-shelf solution like Deco and just make that work for you. That's a more reasonable way to do it. But I think you'll really be better off for a kind of a local or regionally based business to kick that down the road. We've actually got a really good question here that got sent in beforehand.
Sure.
That I'd like to read off.
Let's do it.
Other than logo. And and this is from Isabella. It says, my target market is local business, dance studios, general contractors, medical professionals, etc. What information and pictures are best suited for my website and flyers that will attract the attention of such a diverse market? And she goes on to mention that if she was just focusing on dance, that those things would be easy to figure out. Or, you know, one of those other, we call them vertical or niche markets. That's what you're doing. If you're after the dance market or the contracting market or pest control or whatever you're doing, then that's called a vertical or a niche market. The note that I have scribbled here for an answer is spaghetti sauce. We actually did a podcast on spaghetti sauce and apparel decorating. And what that means basically, and you should listen to that, by the way, what that means basically is that don't make that one decision. Printed material, if you decide to use that, brochures and things like that, are not that expensive. And once you have a website, additional web pages are free. So my advice would be to design the perfect piece that appeals to the dance market, and approach people in the dance market that way. Find, you know, the perfect piece that, you know, will help you approach the contractor market, and send it to them. You know, so it's more like, don't pick the one flavor that you like.
Fisherman with a pole. Right. So I think, it, you know, starting with the pole, perfect working with that one niche market that you have. Get a formula that works, and then take that formula and replicate it.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
you cheer.
You reminded me how much I hate fishing metaphors.
Yeah.
But Mark is right. You put the, you know, you pick the bait to match your hook, or the brochure, the image, the web page to match your market.
Yeah, so get a formula and replicate
it. And look at that CIF podcast on spaghetti sauce. I guarantee it will give you a fuller answer.
So, well, let's move on to the next one.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, so reasonably priced software for keeping track of orders. I have some digitizing software that'll let me keep up with my customers' jobs I digitize, but I'm looking for something to easily input customer job info, including pictures of finished projects, customer information, something that'll let me pull up a customer and see a list of jobs I've done for them. So, there's a bunch of different answers.
Yeah,
to that.
There is, and it depends on how specific you want to get to the industry. Because once again, Business Hub from Deco Network is designed to do exactly that. But you could do a lot of that inside applications like QuickBooks or in Zoho CRM.
Yeah, and a CRM is great. You mentioned Zoho as one of them. There's a bunch of them out there, but that's another. Any tool like that is great. So I would say a CRM or something through Deco Network, if you want an industry-specific one, that's going to be up to you. It's all going to be based on the economy of your business and if you have any other software you work with now and how they can integrate together. But that's a few recommendations, I'd say, right out of the gate.
Okay, I've got another one here. Okay. That is, what is the most you should spend when breaking into a new market?
Yeah, I liked this question, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's from Sheila. And the reason why I liked it is because I give one of these like, cryptic answers that I love to
give. Right.
But it's my answer that I was thinking about in my head was as much as you are willing to lose for one.
In order to learn.
Okay, in order to learn. As much as you're willing to lose and as much as you're willing to possibly not have a return on that investment for 3 to 6 months at least.
Yeah.
So that's the number. So, you know, what's the most you should spend? You know, if you ask Google how much did they spend on getting into the phone market, you know, billions.
Yeah.
And it's working out for them apparently. But for a small business, you know, I mean, start with 3 to 4 digit numbers at least.
Yeah.
You know, hovering on, I'd say a 4 digit number.
I'll say is, you know, we did a couple of podcasts and videos on knowing your numbers in business. And what you've really got to do is kind of guesstimate how much a customer is going to be worth to you. You know, so if you're starting your business and you think you can sell, you know, 12 t-shirts a month to a particular customer, you know, you figure out what the profit is going to be to that job. And now you can see, okay, so if I'm going to make $100 this time from this customer and $1,200 all year from this customer, then how much do you think you should spend in getting that customer? Would you spend $100 to get $1,200? Would you spend $1,000 to get $1,200? Once you have that formula down and you know what you're doing, which takes a lot of work and a lot of investment, then, you know, the answer is there's no limit.
Yeah.
You know, there really isn't.
There is no limit. And it's also because, folks, you have to look at the opportunity and the risk and the reward of all of it. If you already have a business, you know, whether it is apparel or non-apparel related. So if you have a sign shop or a print shop or you have a screen print shop or an embroidery shop and you're considering adding DTG or adding rhinestones or something like that, you're going to make a larger investment in equipment and in that business, you know, to get into it. And that's how you're going to break into a new market. So you might spend $50,000, $60,000 if you're including equipment and supplies
right.
and staff.
Right.
However, if you start doing the math, like you said,
yep.
well, I know for sure that I have these many customers that said they would buy t-shirts from me. They've talked to me. Could you do 100 shirts for me? You know this, and you start yeah. doing the math and you add that up over time, you could easily see how much money you can earn, and then you find that it is worth the investment.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of our answers to those kinds of questions are going to be math. They really are. Patricia's got a good one. How does one go from face-to-face business service and into an online business? So, Patricia, that's a good question, because a lot of small businesses, a lot of our customers see that as kind of the next step. You know, they'll get an embroidery machine or a DTG printer or a CAMS machine, and they'll, they'll kind of saturate their local market or not, you know, understand how they can get more business there, and then want to, you know, go online and try to attract customers that way.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I will tell you is you're probably not done with face-to-face business because there are a lot of different vertical markets you can go after within a particular area that maybe you're not tapping into yet. So if you're already doing face-to-face and you're good at it, then the first thing I would do is look for ways that you can enhance that existing business, or see if there's anything the guy in the building next door to the one you're already going to is going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the answer to going online is, I mean, you've got to have a good website, you've got to have an attractive website, and you've got to do the SEO, the search engine optimization, and pay for ads. So that's that transition.
And I think one easy transition is, do you have customers that are repeat customers now that might be willing to buy online from you in one way or another? And if that's the case, then you can, or you have customers that are asking for that, then you can actually start with some existing customers and say, you can now buy online, and see if you could transition some of that manual work out into a more automated process,
yeah.
like an e-commerce store.
I guess the first question I should have asked Patricia is why do you want to do that?
Sure.
Is it because you want to grow more sales and you can do that online, or is it because you find dealing with customers face-to-face unpleasant, or if there's something else that's preventing you from doing that? So if you want to answer that question, we'll definitely come back to it.
Sure. A couple just quick answers we can do.
Yeah.
Someone had asked, Vince had said, what's the usual charge for embroidery per 1,000 stitches? There's some blanket numbers, you know, thrown out there of $1 to $2, you know, to $3 per 1,000. I mean, those are numbers that you hear often. But $1, $1.50 is a number that a lot of people talk about. But I always say it's not always about that. It's about machine time. So you've
right.
got to think about how long does it take to sew out. 20 letters might only be 6,000 stitches if they're really small, but it's going to take a long time to sew out compared to a 10,000 stitch design of a logo that's one color with
yeah.
no trims. So pay attention to machine time. How much do you want to spend? How much do you want your machine to earn per hour? Then calculate how long it's going to take to how many you can sew in an hour, and do the math that way.
Yeah, and Vince, we go back and forth like this all the time, because you know what you're looking at there when you ask that question is kind of it's a cost up way of pricing.
Yeah.
So you're looking at how much time is it going to take me? How much money do I need to make? And then you're going to try to maybe add a little bit of profit onto that. I much prefer going the other direction, and that's take a look at the design that you're needing to embroider out, and then find some competition online or in your local business and find out how much they're charging. And then decide whether or not you want to charge a little bit more or a little bit less. So more like, you know, what the market will bear, and then see if you can make money at that versus, okay, this is how much money I need to make, and I'm willing to try to ask for this much profit.
Let's see. Patty asked a question, then Patricia came back, so you can answer Patricia. But Patty had said, how do I go into several schools and ask for business? Do I create a design for each school logo with their colors, or what would you suggest? I guess the first thing I would do personally is I would want to just map out who do I have to speak to?
Yeah,
what's the probability of me closing that deal?
What are you trying to sell, Patty? Is it embroidery? Is it rhinestones? Is it DTG? Is it screen print?
The amount of work involved. Which
yeah,
know,
and what
it.
Shows? You know, I mean, like, it's nice to do an embroidered logo, but not a lot of people are going to go, wow, you know, when they see their logo in embroidery. Mm-hmm. But if it's rhinestones, that's a different story.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say is I would first just want to figure out what's the probability of me actually closing this deal. Are the decision makers actually at the school? Do they make the decision on that level or not? So I would first do that and determine. And then from there, is what I'm going to provide them going to blow them away?
Yeah.
If I have a spangle machine or a rhinestone machine, they may have never seen their logo in stones or spangles. Absolutely do it. If it's a printed t-shirt or an embroidered shirt, it might not be that exciting unless you believe your embroidery is that knockout.
Yeah.
So for embroidery and prints, I wouldn't worry too much about going in with their logo. It's just you're going to give yourself work ahead of time to get in there and realize that they are cousins with the person who makes t-shirts now.
I'll tell you what I would do, though, is if you may not want to digitize their specific logo, but I would definitely walk in with samples of your work. You know, so if you're doing, if you want to get into rhinestones, if you wanted to do a printed shirt with rhinestones on it, you know, and carry that as around as samples, if you wanted to do cheer and maybe a generic school logo that you carry around as samples, you know, even if it's print, especially if it's rhinestones, then at least you'll have something to show that will, you know, to give people an idea of your capabilities.
Yeah, and samples, and I would bring, the sample I would bring would be something that's going to look awesome.
Yeah.
And is going to be profitable for you, too, and a reasonable amount of work. So think about the whole picture when you're bringing that sample. So I might want to bring in an organic cotton shirt with a particularly nice print on it that I can turn around and say, like, well, and then if they want that one, it's going to be a particularly profitable item for you.
Yeah.
It might not be your cheapest item as well.
Okay, Patty came back, or Patricia came back and said that she's got a family illness, so she really needs to do business only online temporarily. Okay, Patricia, what I would do is I would set up a shopping cart online if you don't already have one, or at least a PayPal account, and I would get in touch with all of your existing customers. Let them know specifically what's going on. Say, hey, I'm not going to be able to meet you in person for, you know, a certain period of time, but I'm still definitely doing business. Here's how you can place your next order. Okay, and even if it's that, if it's based on an existing order that they've already done, or if you can talk to them on the phone, then do it that way. If you want to deal with people creating brand new, you know, brand new designs and brand new orders, then I would look at a little bit more significant website.
Sure, sure. That sounds great. Let's move on to another question
here. Yeah.
Let's see here.
Linda had a comment. She said, said the problem with schools I found is that there are so many people involved. I think you have to find a group to get into a school, then go for more market share in that school. Yeah, that's interesting, Linda. Thanks for sharing that. I think you're right. So you may go in to visit a specific school and ask for, you know, just stop at the front desk and ask for, hey, you know, does anybody here buy, you know, custom apparel? You know, where do you get your school t-shirts printed? Things like that. And usually the person at the front desk will tell you, you know, who you should be talking to. And once you get in there, you're right. It does go kind of from department to department, maybe from the PTA to the, you know, to the principal's office, to the cheer squad.
Yeah. And it's another thing to think about is it depends. If you're in Hillsborough County and you're trying to get into the school board here, it's probably going to be a challenge. There's going to be a lot of decision makers. There's probably a bid system that might even be online.
Yeah.
You know, however, if you're in a smaller town that is not extremely sophisticated in all of those things, or they might make the decision on the individual level.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, then it's worth it to go to every school because you've got a ton of decision makers. So the next question I was going to ask here, what's the best format for online ads? So Pamela asked that. And I would say, well, we've discussed online ads in our podcast before.
Yeah.
But the way I would answer that, the way I'm interpreting the question is I would want to format the ads into be a cost per click type of ad. So
right.
I advertise in places like Google or Bing or Facebook or Instagram
yep.
where I can pay for an ad to be displayed. And if somebody clicks on that ad, I will choose a bid on how much I'm willing to bid for that click.
Yeah.
And then if somebody clicks on it, I'm charged for it. And there's all different ways to do it, with displaying with images like on Facebook, or Google has that as well, display ads, or there's just text ads for search.
Yeah, so I will tell you that what we use and what I think has been most effective are Google AdWords, just the text ads if they're designed properly. Bing, the Bing Yahoo network has been surprisingly productive for us. The ads are a little bit less expensive. You don't reach the same size market,
mm-hmm.
but you still reach about 20-23% of the people that search for anything. And Facebook, those are the three that I would go after. For Bing and for Google, just text ads. And for Facebook, only display ads.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
And each one of those, you know, they have formats posted, or we've done podcasts and all that stuff. You can definitely take a look. Somebody asks about has anyone found profit in Etsy? Vince said it hasn't worked for him, but I will tell you that we have a kind of a famous customer called The Nesting Project, who runs all of their sales. They do direct garment printing, among other things, through Etsy, and they do a bang-up job. It's just like doing online ads and just like doing websites, just like going to a trade show or a market. It's really not the portal or the environment that you're doing it in that will determine whether or not it's successful for you. It's how you do it, the methods that you're using. It's how if you're working, you know, like Etsy is definitely a community-based sell.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So if you are going to be on Etsy, you have to be on Etsy. You have to participate in their groups. You have to, you know, you have to describe the products in the right way. You have to comment on other people's stuff. It's kind of an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if you decide to do Google AdWords, then you've got to know how to design the ads. You've got to study the response rate. You've got to do your testing. Each one of those things can be successful, including Etsy or Amazon or even Alibaba for some people. You can be successful. You just have to work that venue.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't. Let's do a fishing metaphor.
No.
No.
Linda asked a question. Is it that you need a pretty specific market for Etsy? Now you can do your fishing.
No,
metaphor.
That's exactly where I was going with it. It is, in a way, is for one, don't go out to every single advertising place in the beginning. This is always my answer for everything.
Yeah.
You don't have to dive in and go everywhere at once. If you like Etsy's items, for example, you know, do you need a specific like bride items or holiday items?
Yeah.
For one, is that helps. You also, bride items and Etsy, I can imagine that if I search that now, I would find 100,000 people that sell it. So I would go much deeper than that. So I would go 5 levels deeper than that.
Yeah.
So not only would it be bride items, but it might be, you know...
embroidered wedding night pillows.
Yeah, for Latina brides.
Right.
You know, and really, you know, in Spanish... You know, that's something I would go really, got to go really deep.
So, and I think that's something that you'll see in a lot of our answers is, do you need a pretty specific market for Etsy? Linda, the answer is yes, you need a pretty specific market for everything. I mean, you'll mm-hmm. find better success if, you know, there are a million websites out there. If I type in just like, I want an embroidered logo, you know, how are you going to compete with all the people that do that?
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to do like embroidered tall bowler hats,
mm-hmm.
or you know if your market is Spanish middle-aged women Spanish weddings, get as specific as you can for a market. You know, Riverview Hillsborough County High Schools, not Bob's High School. You know, I mean, get as specific as you can with whatever you do, and you'll find like your time and your advertising dollar is a lot better spent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how do you reach out to contractors, like plumbers and electricians? Where do they congregate? What's the best way to get in front of them? That's from Solid Stitch.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I use plumbers and electricians. You probably heard one of those in a lot of my examples. And so they congregate just like everybody else does at industry trade shows.
Yeah.
There are plumber conventions, electrician conventions. But what you might do is be a little creative. And like, let's say you want to go after electricians and you want all of their uniform and cap business and things like that. Then what I would do is think about who sells to electricians.
Yeah.
And that is their distributors, actually, because I used to be in that business, that sell electricians like Graybar Electric or CES. And what you could do is partner with one of their salespeople and trade leads, you know, or, you know, you could just go to all of their businesses and prospect them.
You could and ask them to come to your house to give you a quote.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And just and pitch them.
And just like, yeah, just sit there with a table right in the front driveway and do that.
Spin it around. My thought is if you want to literally get in front of people like contractors and things of that nature, that Chamber of Commerce thing that I've mentioned,
that's a good
a
idea.
Lot of things. Local Chamber of Commerce, local like meetup.com might even have a group, you know, of people that are like that. But I would go to small business local events if you can. And you'll not only get into plumbers and electricians, but you'll find that there's a bunch of other niches out there. And then you could also, if you're looking to spend money in advertising, if you wanted to do like direct mail ads or something like that, you can easily get, you know, a list of all of the plumbers and electricians in your area. So you could go door to door, you could pick up the phone and call them, you can advertise in front of them, you can put advertising in front of them, you could go to their businesses as well. So there's a lot of different ways, but as far as congregating where a plumbers and electricians going to congregate, I would say if you can find some sort of a local event that is happening. And then you're not going to go to a trade show necessarily and meet a bunch of guys and make a bunch of money.
Right.
But if you go to a trade show, go to whatever, if they're offering free food or drinks after, go to that event.
Right.
You know, if there's a dinner that you can pay for extra, go to that dinner.
Yeah.
Go to the social side of things in those events, because that's where you'll actually meet somebody.
Actually, Vince says, by the way, Vince and his wife, they're one of our Cold Essie success stories. So you can go at coldessie.com and look under success stories and see a little bit about how they got into the business and everything. He said they do a lot with construction. You have to go to the company's offices and talk to who's in charge of purchasing and go from there.
Yeah, and I always liked calling and asking who it is. Then when I go there, I know who to ask for.
Yeah, that's good.
And that can also knock down some of your drive time, especially if they're not. And then find the area of town where they do it, because there's if I want to do tile and carpet, I know an area in Tampa where I can go where within 3 or 4 miles
absolutely,
I can get to 25
yeah.
companies. So I would have no problem cold calling and walking around there and getting in front of everyone. But if they're out and about all over town,
it's a little harder.
Yeah.
Imran has a question, and
sure.
thanks for tuning in, Imran. He says, "Hi, I have a custom T-shirt printing business in Bahrain. I hope you're staying cool in Bahrain right now, Imran. And looking for expansion. Any suggestion? You're using now heat transfer vinyl print and cut and screen print." And a little bit about how to sell online. Imran, you're really going to have to start, you know, from scratch and just listen and watch all the videos that we've done so far because it's a general question. What I would say is if you have a customer base that you're doing heat transfers, and you're doing print and cut, and you're doing screen printing, then you should make sure, go through your customer list, make sure every customer is buying all of those different things from you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that goes for any of you. If you do more than one technology or one method of apparel decorating, you should really make sure that everyone that buys screen printed stuff from you knows you do rhinestones. And everybody that buys vinyl from you knows you do screen printing. You know, so just make sure you've got those bases covered. Usually you can mine a lot of business just because you assume customers know what you do. And you often need to remind them.
And it doesn't matter if you've got a sign or sent an email.
Yeah, forget that.
I send emails. I change things on the website all the time on Coleman & Company. I've got all these different channels on how we share. And then I'll have somebody every once in a while come and say, "Oh, I didn't even know that you sold rhinestones."
Yeah, absolutely.
And I say, they were on the homepage that you went to and advertised in your email for months.
Disturbingly enough, I've heard that from people that work in the same building.
Yeah.
I didn't know you guys sold that.
So that, you know, talk to people about it and mention it. So another good question we have is, how do we get started with social media marketing? Okay, so social media advertising or social media
marketing,
you know, so that's two answers. The advertising is short, is go to start with Facebook and watch some videos read their resources
yeah.
and have a little bit of money to spend and just start playing around.
So, and I would say, you know, first you're going to need to start off, I would start with Facebook.
Yeah.
That is the most easily accessible and inexpensive and most widely distributed social media platform that you can get into. The first thing I would do is start a business page. So, and then start to maybe self-edit.
Asking you to like their insurance page.
Right.
I don't want to like your insurance page. I like you.
Yes.
And I might even buy my insurance from you, but I never want your stuff on my page.
Right.
So it's a tricky thing to do. So what you have to give, you have to provide people content that they're going to want to look at. That they're going to want to share. So there you go. No problem. There's a podcast actually mentioned by somebody. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to social media marketing, if you make t-shirts, you've got to take pictures of cool shirts that you make and put them on there.
Yeah.
And put them on that page and then share them. And ask people to share it too.
I had a great idea that I think it's a great idea I shared on one of the podcasts, and that if you're in the custom apparel business, you are producing things specifically for your customers, right? So, you know, you're doing a school design and it's a print or an embroidery design or something like that. So videotape your machine embroidering it, or take a picture of it after it's printed, and then put it up on your Facebook page and let your customer know it's there.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing will get something shared more than, oh, look, this is them actually embroidering my shirt, because they've never seen that before. Or look, the guy's stacking the shirts to send out for our charity events. You know, and people will share that stuff like crazy. So having a Facebook business page, not using your personal page ever, and putting content that's shareable and useful.
Yeah, the video thing is, we've mentioned it, we've talked about that before too. But for the most part, whatever you do, in whatever apparel decorating you do, DTG, a CAMS machine, an embroidery machine, most people haven't seen it up close or don't really know, you know. So you got to put a video of it and a picture of it. People will think it's really cool. I printed some t-shirts on a DTG printer, for a bachelor party event that I was going to. And I just took pictures of it printed, and I had my phone out and I showed them.
Yeah.
And it literally, everybody wanted to see it. And they're like, what is that? How, you know, so people think it's cool.
Yeah. And I will also say that, no, I won't. Never mind.
Okay, great.
Okay, so do you ever find your ideas get copied off social media? Oh, I know what I was going to say. We'll get to you in just a second, Linda. And that's, I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of Coleman & Company and Coldesi's marketing strategy and our social media strategy is based around being useful to you guys. So you have to think about that for your customers. You know, what do they want to see? I mean, we're doing this. This is marketing, what we're doing right now. When we do a podcast, it's marketing. When we put good stuff up on the Apparel Startups, marketing, because, you know, we want to be useful. So if you start with social media marketing, then just make sure that your content is shareable and that it's useful and you get it in front of your customers. Okay, so do you ever find your ideas get copied off social media? Sure.
Your ideas will be copied from anywhere you put them if somebody else can see it.
If you're doing a good job, then you will be copied. You should embrace that. There's nothing you can do about it, really, that's going to be worthwhile. You should just put your best stuff out there and move on, you know, with that kind of utility attitude.
And the chances are, you know, it's not, you can have enough, if another small business takes your idea, you know, going through the route of trying to do something about it, you know, and get financially compensated for it, it's probably not really going to be very fruitful for you.
It's been done.
Yeah, it's been done.
It's been done.
Now, if Walmart takes your idea, you know, you might have just made yourself $1 million.
Yeah. And you can poke people a little bit. You can write a letter to Facebook if someone's pirated your idea and put it on there, or Twitter, or Google. If someone, you know, if Google is displaying a search result and it's got your stuff on it, you can make some noise that way. But probably your time would be better, because obviously you can create stuff that people want to copy. Your time would be better coming up with the next thing.
Yeah, and ideas often churn through. If we're talking about ideas like a cool t-shirt design or embroidery design, Generally speaking, it doesn't last forever anyway. So if you keep on front of having new ideas and marketing your current idea,
I think we were a part of that strategy for them. Here's a great question from Pamela Carrillo again. What is better, a phone meeting or an in-person sales call? Gosh, that kind of depends on whether or not you're better on the phone or in person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I prefer I prefer to do things in person, mm-hmm. if possible. That way, you know, you can make more of an impact. You know, you can be more personable. If you've got a small business, then people are going to buy from you personally. They're not buying from your company. You know, when somebody buys a machine from Cold Essie, yeah, I mean, Cold Essie's great and the equipment's great, but it's their great relationship with the salesperson, you know, that really makes the difference.
And I like the phone. You know, here's where, you know, where we're opposite, but that's fine. It's also our history. You know, most of my sales career was on inside sales. So
that's
sold
true.
Money on the phone. I sold embroidery machines on the phone. I've sold a lot of things and services on the phone. And
yeah.
I did plenty in person, but...
And I sold Model Ts. That's what you're in person. That's what he's trying to say.
So, but I sold a lot on the phone. So when you're on the phone, you can make more calls. You can touch more people in the period of time that you have. So if we're talking about calling everybody who sells carpets
yeah.
in your area, I could probably almost call everybody in a week, I'd say, in my
yeah.
in our area. In 1 week, I could have dialed the phone and called everybody. There's no way I could have visited every place in that period
well,
of time.
Well, maybe you can split the difference and call to set an appointment.
Yeah, and that's
I like
what
that.
I was saying, mentioning earlier, two things. One, just do what you like. If the phone makes you nervous, but walking in, I could shake anybody's hand, but I
yeah.
call on the phone, then don't try to force yourself to
right.
do what you're good at. But also, mix it. You know, call all the flooring places around, find out who makes the decision, prospect. You know, that's what that would be referred to as. Prospect on the phone, decide who's worth an in-person visit,
yeah.
and then hit all those people.
You know, we haven't we should really have referred right back to our Test Everything podcast.
Sure.
So here's the real answer. There is no better method between phone call and visits. What you should do is try both. You personally try both for a week each, maybe, to get a good sample. And then at the end of each week, count up the amount of money that you've made for the amount of time that you spent and go with that one.
Sure. I have a question, a good question.
Sure.
I'm at the bottom of the list for SEO. Barbara said this.
Okay.
How can a new business improve SEO? Economically speaking, of course.
Okay.
So the first thing is we've got a podcast on getting found online.
Yes.
So that's the first thing you have to do.
You have to do all those things.
You have to do the setup. So I'm going to refer you to the podcast for the full answer, but get your business set up to be found on Google, found on Bing, found on any map software that's out there. So start there. That's going to be free. Okay?
Right.
And that's going to work locally pretty quickly for you, you know, within a reasonable amount of time.
Right.
Where if somebody search Tampa Embroidery Company, I message Mark every day because we get a phone call from a business that used to have one of our phone numbers
right.
some years ago,
right.
and their phone number is still on Google. So
and it was my fault.
Search,
it's my fault.
And they put it on there, and now
yeah.
we get a phone call all the day looking
yeah.
for a bling company.
So that's a good example.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a test site, and for a local business. And here's what we did. Is we set up a website that had keywords in it that we wanted people to search and find the business for.
Mm-hmm.
So Tampa Bay, Rhinestone Designs, you know, things along those lines. Then we made sure that there were words on the website that matched those.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of articles on there, some long content, things like that. And then we went to Google and to Bing and a few other places and filled out all of their forms on getting found online. Because that's pretty simple to do. And because we were very specific in the words that we chose, and we set up the website correctly, and we did those things for Google and Bing, we got ranked pretty quickly,
mm-hmm.
Pretty easily. I don't know if that will mean more business for you if you do those things, but that's what you need to do, is go to Google My Business, go to Bing Places and Bing Business Listings, and start there and fill out those forms. get yourself a Facebook page and link back to your website. It's an art form, and it's an ongoing process.
Yeah, and there's also other things. I always go back to specifics. If there's anything specific you can talk about, if you make Irish dance dresses in Tampa, that's not enough.
You come up with great examples.
Because these are all real things Irish that dancers. People do. Okay. So if you make Irish dance dresses, not only are you in Florida, but you're in Tampa, Florida. But not only are you in Tampa, Florida, you're in Palmasia, which is a neighborhood in Tampa, Florida.
Right.
And you specifically do things that are for children. So have all of those words in your website and in your description. And this way, you're narrowing yourself down. But when you've got somebody who specifically lives near Palmasia looking for that product, they're going to find you. And then you can continue to replicate. Once that works, replicate it over and over again for a lot of little niche markets.
Now, Gary's got a question here. Gary, I don't know if you're online right now. He said that we're having problems breaking out. Our 2015 revenue was about $600,000. We're having problems growing to the $1 million mark. How can we break out? So, Gary, if you are here, first thing I did when I saw your email, Gary, was I looked at your website. Because it was the last part of your email address, which is great. You've got a website. But I noticed that when I went to the website on two or three browsers, there were actually errors across the top. And they were weird enough that they made me want to click away. So you've got some basics to do there of just making sure that a customer has a very comfortable and easy experience in dealing with you, that you don't have any of that kind of stuff on the top of your website. And really, it's how are you getting that business now? Because I think you're doing pretty well. And how much are you spending on marketing? So the answer to more business is to either mine your existing business, which we talked about already, going after customers and letting them know everything else that you do and doing a better job into marketing for them. For example, at Coldesi, we sell embroidery machines, direct-to-garment printers. We sell rhinestone machines and the Pro Spangle. Coleman & Company sells cutters and ink and the patch kit and a variety of different equipment. So once you're our customer, we market to you over and over again because we have more things to sell. Mm-hmm. I would encourage you to make sure that you're doing the same thing to make sure you're growing your business as much as possible. And then once that's all handles, then you've got to go right to advertising and marketing. So you're not going to grow by doing the same things every day. And just having a website and letting the phone ring is not a growth strategy.
Yeah, and there's a couple other little things you could do within how you do business now. So what I would do is make sure you're efficient across all boards, that you're reducing any errors, you're reducing mistakes. Those are little things that you're going to do, because if you're trying to hit a new mark, sometimes the wall you're hitting is also going to be with delivering the product.
Yeah,
you might be hitting a wall on the back end of things where you get so busy. Do you have people who are selling for you, helping with operations, because operations can't keep up? Do you have is something within the system not working? So I would make sure you look at the entire system. I would do whatever you can to enhance the experience of your customer as well.
Absolutely.
So make your customers that much more excited to come back. So I don't know your business. I don't know if three-quarters of that business is repeat customers or if you have a lot of churning in and out of customers. So if you've got a heavy churn on customers, then you want to make sure you do things to get those people to come back.
Yeah.
If it's low churn and you've got a ton of repeat customers, then you've got to figure out how you got those people and do the same formula. And then ask for referrals.
That's huge.
You've got it. Hopefully you have enough of a customer base that you can get people on the phone or on email and say, hey, do you think we did a good job for you?
Yeah.
It would help me so much if you had anybody you could refer me to. And ask for a name if you can. Go to their business, thank them in person, ask them for names, things like that.
You're reminding me of good stuff because one of the things that we always talk about is that when we do a webinar, when we do an in-person event about getting found online, especially, and we ask, you know, raise your hands if you have a website. Very few people do. And then how do you get most of your business? And everyone else raises their hand for referrals, for word of mouth. So the answer to more business is more people. Mm-hmm. So you've got to meet more people, and you can meet them directly, or you can meet them through referrals, or you can meet them through advertising.
Yeah, and you might be doing enough in business where you can also afford some help in this as well, meaning maybe it's just having some sort of a customer liaison service.
Yeah.
You hire a young man or a young woman who's, they don't have to be a super salesperson, but they call all the customers, they email customers, they get on Facebook and make sure they interact with people just on a light level. Hey, yeah. Was your order good? Did you get it? Great. Thank you. If you know anybody, you can, maybe that might be a little step you can take
yeah.
in the direction. Maybe you don't want to hire a salesperson that wants to make six figures a year.
Yeah.
But maybe you start light and get somebody who's just calling customers for you and making sure everything is well. And then when a fire lights up, he or she can pass it on to somebody who can handle it rather than never knowing about it.
I actually did that just today, as a matter of fact. Just following up on a couple of customers that we hadn't talked to in a while just to see, you know, what kind of a job we were doing. And it was great. You know,
okay.
I just want to say. But we do that kind of stuff too. Eric, I see you. Eric is our neighbor here in the Tampa Bay area. In what direction do you think the apparel decorating industry is heading? Well, I'd like to say more direct-to-garment printing.
Yeah.
But what I here's what I think is I really don't think the apparel decorating industry has one direction. You know,
yeah.
I really think, you know, it's a string of individual small businesses. And because the technology keeps getting better and easier and making more beautiful things and continually less expensive over time, I just think that that both businesses and consumers are going to have more choices. And what we found is we have a growing number of people that are already in the business that are expanding by adding different technologies.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to people, you know, all of our customers, used to be that the vast majority of our customers were just starting out.
Mm-hmm.
But now probably 30 or 40% are adding on, you know, to what they're already doing. So they're doing okay. They want to do better. So they add different technologies.
Yeah. And I think that we're in a transparent world. We're in a world of personal touch. We're in a world of customization where people like things that are theirs. The world is can be so cluttered and confused that people don't always think that something is for them or their own. And that's why social media, you know, is so appealing, because you have a page that's yours and you can invite who you want in and you can go out
yeah.
and see into other people's worlds. So I think the custom apparel industry only benefits from that, because you can make things that are just for your customers and
yeah.
you can give the opportunity. And honestly, for the most part, it's going to get a custom t-shirt made sometimes isn't that much cheaper than buying one off the shelf or,
right.
or more expensive.
Or
either way.
Yeah.
You know, so there's with the improvement in technology and the speed of being able to do things, some cost has come down.
Yeah.
And I think that there's only room to grow if people are trying.
Here's the size of the opportunity the way I see it, and I'll use an example for you, Eric, and that's we have a customer in Hillsborough County here locally that has a cutter and a pro spangle.
Mm-hmm.
She makes her entire living from 3 high schools and 2 cheer camps.
Mm-hmm.
She's busy all the time. She makes as much money as she wants to. She's comfortable with it. She's not looking to expand. As a matter of fact, she took down a Facebook page because she had so much business, so she doesn't advertise. So that's the size of the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's out there. One person, 3 schools, enough money to get by. There you go.
Great. I like this question. How
okay.
far ahead of holiday, like Valentine's Day, should I offer a product or a design? So it's interesting, because if you go to Target or Walmart, they've got Christmas Eve,
yeah.
they have Valentine's
yeah.
Day stuff up. You know, and that's slightly irritating to me, but the marketing and sales side of me understands it.
Yeah.
This is going to be back to testing, and it depends. But really what I would say, in my opinion on it, is start offering early, like now, you know, for Valentine's Day things.
Right.
And see what response rate is. And then it's going to take you a little bit of time in the growth
Test
of your
out.
Business to know, to say, well, for me, my Valentine, you know, my customer base is people buying online last minute, so all my Valentine's Day doesn't sell until February 1st.
Yeah.
If you're talking about if you market to businesses that have Valentine's Day apparel they wear, they've already probably made that decision.
Listen,
on where they're first.
I've got a better answer.
What do you got?
If your customers are men, then it's obvious you wait until the day before Valentine's
yes.
Day to put it up there, because that's when they're going to order it anyway. Now, you know what you might do, Linda, is you might have, you know, if you're talking about online marketing, you know, you should have some Valentine's Day designs, some wedding designs, some Arbor Day designs, mm-hmm. Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever you want to do. You should have them and just, you know, feature them on the website, you know, from one holiday to the next.
Yeah.
So after Christmas, if the next holiday is New Year's, put your New Year's stuff up. After New Year's, put your Valentine's Day stuff up. And it doesn't have to dominate your website, but, you know, you can make it obvious that you sell that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And that's basically what's happening if you go to Target or Walmart or any of these stores. You know, as soon as one is over, they have the next one up because that shelf space is designed for seasonal. So if you have a website or a store and you have space that's designed for seasonal, then you're going to want to move into the next season as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And we've got a couple of questions here beforehand about how to get more business sales. Mm-hmm. And I like that because I think, you know, that's my bent is a business to business kind of sale. Because mm-hmm. you talk to one person and you get an order for 1,000 pieces instead of 1,000 people that order one. So I'm just going to say, you know, in order to get in front of, to get more business sales, you have to get in front of businesses. Mm-hmm. And however you decide to do that, all the different ways that we've discussed, you can do that with advertising directly to businesses. Like for plumbers, electricians, if you are online and you want to try Google or Bing kind of AdWords, then you could do an ad that says plumber's uniform embroidery. Or you could say custom electrician's jackets or, you know, embroidered electrical gloves or whatever you want to do is go after the businesses through the keywords if you're going to do advertising. And if it's a local market, then you go after businesses in the Chamber of Commerce mm-hmm. or by knocking on their door.
Some of the folks that I know and I've met throughout my life that are a service type of industries. And I find that the custom apparel business is a service type of industry.
Yeah.
Usually people have a need and they fulfill it. And then the need is done until the next one comes up. So it'd be similar to how someone might get landscaping done or you mentioned plumbers and contractors and stuff. So some of those things are going to be, you know, you're depending on events and on issue and on things happening with your customers.
Yeah.
So what you've got to do is the people who I've known who are the most successful at that, one, are you've got to get your back end clean of the business. You have to be able to produce and prepare and get it out and have a nice clean system.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of sales, do a bunch of work, make no sales, then be dead and have to make a bunch of sales. And you ride this wave because you don't have a nice clean system throughout. So that's the first step, is to make sure that you have times of the day you sell, you have times of the day you produce.
Yeah.
You are not over promising things, that you spend 4 days working on a job and doing nothing else but production for 4 days, and then now you're dead again. So you've got to set your time and get a clean business structure. And then the other is, so those people are successful that way.
Yep.
If you pour concrete, if you are talking to customers every day from 9 to 10 in the morning and from 1 to 2, and you're always spending that time following up, making quotes, answering emails, calling people back, then you won't lose business, which is what happens a lot in the apparel business.
It's a one-off.
Yeah,
it
happens one-off all the time. So that's an issue, you know, that you have to deal with. And the other is being active in your local market and local world. So
Chamber
of
Commerce.
Go to events. Go to events. Go to, if your kid plays baseball or soccer, you've got to go to all of, you should go to every game. Not just because that's, they want you to
and
go.
Wear a shirt.
So talk to people. Is really, I think, the answer in as many places as you can. So some of them are going to be specific business events. And if you can find, and you can go to a bunch of those, find the ones that you feel are productive. Because what's good about you and the custom apparel, all these customers that you have, there are a lot of people that you've talked to. Use The only downside on that one is you've got to have something else to go along with it to handle the, unless you're going to strictly niche towards a feminine market. If you plan on having a masculine market as well, then you want to make sure you've got a cutter or a printer or an embroidery machine to go along with that.
Yeah.
So a lot of times people will go spangle and cutter because it's not, I'm not investing a ridiculous amount of money. I'm only adding a little bit more to get that cutter, and now I've got something to handle men's market, meaning I can use vinyl, and something like spangle, which is just unique and people have not seen before, which is
now,
awesome.
In clean, just to ROI numbers, I would say that that's all true. You know, on the other hand, that, you know, you are limited to your market.
Yeah.
So with something like a DTG printer, you know, which also the ROI is great because the ink on a t-shirt, you know, is almost nothing really. You can do a lot with it. You can appeal to men, you can appeal to women, you can do children's clothes, you can do just about anything you want to. And that's probably pretty close to the Pro Spangle.
Yeah, and I think that that no matter what you're doing, you know, apparel has a fantastic return on investment overall.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Custom apparel,
yeah. And the reason is there's any item that does have a shelf life still has a really long shelf life.
Yeah.
So like ink is something that would have a shelf life, but it's not perishable.
Yeah.
Compared to if you're in the food industry, if you've got a food truck and that was your idea,
it
might be awesome, but if you don't sell what you've got now, you might be gone.
You're done. Yeah.
So it looks like, let's see, is our stream?
I think that's what I was thinking is, did something happen? Stream status is bad.
Okay. So some people might have experienced buffering or slowing down or something like that. So hopefully all is well. But I think now's a good time to end.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a good. We've wrapped it up well. So hopefully everyone can still hang out and see if we've lost you. This is recorded, so you can come back and watch it again and you can skip to the part that you made it.
Yeah, great.
Good.
Hey, thanks for some great questions today, and we got some good response. So if you'd like us to do this again, just email us and let us know.
Yeah, email us or go on the Facebook group. Or pick up the phone. You know we're here.
Okay, cool.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.